It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it is 26 degrees under fair skies. Today is Monday, February 10th, 2014. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. Airlift Northwest could bring back its popular membership program under legislation introduced in the Alaska House and Senate. The state's Division of Insurance last November told the company to discontinue its AirCare membership because it no longer met the letter of Alaska law. That prompted complaints to Southeast Alaska legislators, and Representative Kathy Munoz started working on legislation to allow air ambulance membership programs in the state. Several Southeast legislators have signed on to the bill. Rosemarie Alexander has more.
Airlift Northwest started the Alaska AirCare program in 2008. Nearly all of the more than 3,200 members are in Southeast, a third of them in Juneau. An emergency medical flight from Southeast Alaska to Seattle or Anchorage can cost $100,000 or more. Carla Hart purchased her membership about 4 years ago when she learned about the program through her doctor's office. She says she did some research and figured it was a no-brainer.
$100 to not have to worry if I'll have a financial hardship if I need a medevac.
A number of Hart's family and friends are also AirCare members, and so far, no one has had to use it. It's peace of mind, she says. AirCare is purchased by household, and one membership covers everyone living in a home. The cost is $100 a year. It's considered a supplement to other health insurance. Airlift Northwest Executive Director Chris Martin says the company has always been clear that AirCare is not an insurance program.
In most medical situations, insurance is billed and then there's a copay. What an AirCare membership guarantees you is that you have no out-of-pocket expenses or no copay. So we bill the insurance, we take what the insurance reimburses us. You, as our AirCare member, do not see a bill for any further services.
The AirCare program operates in Washington State as a nonprofit, and it was allowed to operate in Alaska under an exemption. Acting Insurance Director Marty Hester says Airlift Northwest was no longer considered a nonprofit when the company restructured under the University of Washington Medical School.
The program that they were offering was a transfer of risk, and that is the definition of insurance, when the risk is transferred from one person to another.
House Bill 300 and Senate Bill 159 should correct the problem. The legislation allows air ambulance providers to offer membership programs like AirCare and permits the insurance division to adopt regulations covering such programs. Representative Munoz's office worked with Hester on the legislation, but he wouldn't comment on the bill. She says she heard from a lot of constituents when they found out their supplemental plan was no longer good.
The legislation will reestablish the opportunity for companies like Airlift Northwest to provide a membership service to residents that wish to have that extra coverage for emergency transport.
Munoz says more than 1,300 Juneau residents have an AirCare membership, and many of them are senior citizens.
Certainly we live in an area that is somewhat isolated, and people, especially seniors and people facing difficult health situations, want this added assurance that they can get out safely and at a reasonable cost.
According to Airlift Northwest's Director Martin, Alaska is the only state in the U.S. that does not allow medevac services to offer a supplemental membership program to help defray the cost of an emergency medical flight. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
The number of finalists for superintendent of the Sitka School District has been cut from 3 to 2. Eddie Campbell and Mary Wegner will be interviewed by the school board and district staff in Sitka this week. The school board convened last Thursday to discuss the applicants for superintendent and immediately went into executive session. When they emerged, Board President Lon Garrison said that a third candidate, Joseph Krause, is no longer in the running. Krause is currently a teacher in the Kodiak School District. Garrison did not discuss why the board had decided to interview only two of the three finalists.
We decided that one of them was not a good fit for Krause.
School board member Cass Pook was absent. Of the two remaining candidates, Eddie Campbell is currently the superintendent of schools in Parsons, West Virginia. Mary Wegner is the current assistant superintendent of the Sitka School District. Campbell and Wegner will be in Sitka this week. On Wednesday, there will be a meet and greet with the public at Sitka High School from 5 to 6:30 p.m. The candidates will then have three interviews on Thursday, one with current Superintendent Steve Bradshaw, an interview with district staff, and an interview with the school board, which is open to the public. The public interviews will take place in the district office boardroom at Kikuchihin Elementary School. Commercial fisheries have never been more important to Southeast Alaska, and the region's hatchery programs are a critical part of that success. That was the message Steve Reifenstuhl delivered to the Sitka Chamber of Commerce last week. Reifenstuhl is the general manager of the Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association, based in Sitka. ENSRA is one of two regional nonprofit hatchery programs in the Panhandle and one of the most successful in the state. In this brief excerpt, Reifenstuhl runs the numbers.
Here is what the fishing community brings to Sitka, Sitka's economy. Nearly 2,000 people earn money catching fish or processing fish in Sitka, by far the largest employer. 11% of Sitka's population fishes commercially. Think about it, that's over 1 in 10 fish commercially. We have three major processors in town and a combined payroll in Sitka of $13.5 million. In 2013, they processed 90 million pounds of fish, valued at $72 million. That's to the fishermen, referred to as ex-vessel value. The first wholesale value of this fish is somewhere around $150 million as it goes out the processor's door. And as it swirls around Sitka's economy, it has a total economic output of over $200 million. That's just for 1 year.
Except for a brief detour to Silver Bay Seafoods, Reifenstuhl has been at ENSRA for his entire 34-year career. He discussed the circumstances in the 1970s that led to the creation of ENSRA and its counterpart, the Southern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association, also known as SARA. There have been lean years in ENSRA's history, but not recently. Last season alone, it contributed over $20 million in value to the commercial fisheries.
Now, no individual fisherman is getting rich on this. I don't want you to think that. There are roughly 1,000 hand trawlers, but the permit holders that focus their, you know, much of their time in the season are the power trawlers, and there's just under 1,000 of those, seiners, 380 of those, and gillnet, about 425. So roughly about 2,000 dedicated fishermen fishing each summer on salmon. So that money, of course, gets spread among them. And I thought it was important not to have some misconception. $20 million is a lot of money, but when you think of it spread out, it's very helpful, but it's not enough to pay all the bills. Wild stocks is what they really depend on to make their season.
In his half-hour presentation, Reifenstuhl stressed the value of the guided sport fisheries in Sitka and the contribution of both the commercial and guided sport sectors to Sitka's tax base. But he did give the commercial sector exclusive credit for one thing, voluntarily imposing a 3% tax on their harvest to support the nonprofit hatchery programs, an investment of about $33 million over the decades, he said, that has produced value of almost $240 million. He told the chamber, "I want that to be your takeaway." You can hear extended audio of ENSRA General Manager Steve Reifenstuhl's remarks to the Sitka Chamber of Commerce at our website, kcaw.org. A bill that would continue and expand Alaska's tax credit for seafood processors installing new equipment had support from the Parnell administration and the industry before the House Fisheries Committee last week. Joe Vicknicki reports.
House Bill 204 is sponsored by Alan Osterman of Kodiak. Peggy Wilson of Wrangell's a co-sponsor. It would extend a seafood processing tax credit beyond 2015 and would add processing machines for herring to the list of new equipment that would qualify for a tax credit. It would also add equipment for putting salmon in cans, different from the tall or short cans traditionally used by industry. Joe Jacobson, director of the state's Division of Economic Development, told the committee that the administration supported the measure. He said the tax credit promotes innovation in creating new seafood products and that diversification has helped weather price fluctuations.
You know, if you're going to many different countries and you have, you know, salmon burgers, you have canned salmon, you have salmon jerky, it just supports the price so that when one market of canned salmon in the UK dies, well, now you have a fillet market in the U.S. or you have a roe market in Japan or the Ukraine or other places. And it just kind of lessens the impact of individual markets that may go up or down because you're just building a broader portfolio of products that are spread out.
Jacobson said current salmon can sizes are out of touch with markets and consumers are asking for smaller sizes of canned fish. The bill would also provide the tax credit to companies that install equipment for making a product out of the fish scraps and waste. That was an important addition for Trident Seafood's Joe Plesha.
You know, one of the best ways to add value to Alaska's resources is obviously to produce a product from something that's now currently being ground up and discharged back into the water.
Plesha and others are concerned that the Environmental Protection Agency could start requiring some shore-based processing plants in Alaska to screen out the solid fish scraps from waste before it's pumped into the water, or even barge that waste out to the open ocean.
That's Joe Vicnicki reporting in Petersburg. And fishing opens at noon today for golden king crab and tanner crab. The overall guideline harvest level, or GHL, for golden king crab in the region is just under 500,000 pounds. The biggest portions of the GHL are in waters around Admiralty Island, including Stevens Passage, Frederick Sound, and Chatham Strait. The season also opens at noon today for tanner crab. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game estimates there's 4 million pounds of mature male tanner crab in the region, down a little from the department's estimate a year ago. That's all for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka. We're going to rejoin NPR's Morning Edition. I'll be back with you at 8:18 with a live interview. Have a good morning.